Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish Podcast.
It's the Fulhamish Podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC, here to take a look back at one of the most vintage Fulhamish performances I think we've ever seen. My name is Jack Collins, and I'll be your host today. And to celebrate, I suppose, in some ways, a vintage Fulhamish performance, we've got a vintage Fulhamish lineup here for us. The last time that the four of us were on a podcast together with nobody else was April 2017, after 2-3-1 wins over Aston Villa and Norwich City in the Championship that took us into the playoff places. It's been some time. So please, ladies and gentlemen, make some noise for the Professor, Mr. Benjamin. How you doing, mate?
Yes, mate. I'm very well, thank you. So good to be on with all of you. I can't believe it's been 7 years.
Yeah, we're coming up to 7 years, the anniversary of this one. Exactly. A man who would not miss Burnley away for the life of him. It is Mr. Dom Betts. How you doing, mate?
Hello, mate. Yeah, I'm good. I'm just still trying to recover mentally and physically from yesterday.
I think we all are in some regards. And the old faithful, a reliable servant at any given time. Mr. Farrell Monk, how you doing, mate?
Just glad to be asked. I'll keep bounding up to you like a Labrador at any opportunity. Good evening, Jack. Good evening, everyone. Good to be back on.
Fantastic. Yeah, I mean, 2-2, Burnley from 2-0 up. You couldn't really write it. The curse goes on at Turf Moor. Faz, what were the best of the three-word reviews?
Obviously, there was a lot of wordplay on the moor in Turf Moor, so I'll just get those out of the way. We had Lee Warner's more bad defending. We had TJ's more points dropped. Rick Cardis's Turf Moor tears. On the positive side, we had from Brian Lake, we had one more point. You know, let's look at the positives in that regard. We had Fulham Mike's Claret and Blue. B-L-E-W, that is. The one that really tickled me was Josh Turbury's Claret and Poo. Which I quite enjoyed. another 73 more years in terms of our how long we haven't won there. Money's for nothing from Liam Byrne. And finally, the one that really actually tickled me the most, even though it's just completely just balmy, DJ H's with 3,000 points dropped, all in capitals, which I think was probably just in response to the complete meltdown that was on Twitter yesterday following the capitulation.
Yeah, I mean, capitulation is exactly the right word, isn't it? Dom, we were in complete control. What was the meltdown like within the away end at full time?
I don't necessarily think it was a meltdown. Everyone was like, oh, for fuck's sake. Like, it was. I think that was more of the feeling. Like, there wasn't really much like anger at the end of the game. It was more people just laughing that of course, this is the way it's going to happen at a ground we haven't won since 1951. We haven't won a league away game since the first game of the season, which we probably shouldn't have won that either. It was just like everyone sort of collective, oh, that's happened then. It's Turf Moor again. I don't know what's more Fulhamish, this one or the last one. I can't quite work it out.
Yeah, it's been incredibly depressing it going to Turf Moor, and it's a shame because it's a cracking away day. And every time we go up there, you're like, oh, it was a really good day out, apart from Fulham. And it just seems to be the way of things when we go to Lancashire. Ben, a strange one, because actually for 71 odd minutes, Fulham were excellent, and then fell apart.
The way I kind of viewed it was like it was a game of three parts. Like the first 15 minutes was kind of like two very equal teams just trying to battle it out. And I really liked how condensed Burnley made the pitch. I think we looked really one-shaped at points, and like we had just one idea. Then we figured out, oh, we can just play it over the top, which we did for the next 50-odd minutes and got two goals out of it. And then the last 19 minutes was just a pure capitulation on our part. I think specifically when Silva took off Bobby Deckard over Reed and struck Andreas out on the right, Vincent Kompany was like, aha. It was like a light bulb went off in his head, and he was like, okay, I'm just going to overload one of the sides and just hope it works. And then it just did. I mean, I don't know. I'm not quite sure what Leno was thinking on the first goal. The second goal could have been totally avoided. But there were some green shoots for Fulham. I think we looked really good at points, especially with the use of the ball towards the end of the first half. There's a large part of me that hopes Nigeria get knocked out very, very soon, because without Iwobi, I think we really lack any sort of teeth going forward and anyone that wants to hold the ball and drive on to relieve any sort of pressure. So I think there's definitely some concerns there to go alongside the green shoots.
Yeah, I mean, very much so. Faz, what did you make of it generally? We'll go through kind of each goal, etc., as we get on with the podcast. What was your general thoughts about it, apart from crushing disappointment?
I'll talk about anything but crushing disappointment. It was, you know, it was just kind of the story of our season so far. Like, apart from the two goals, the fact that we've got so much brilliant approach play going forward, and then when we finally get into the final third, that, you know, we seem to just shit the bed a little bit. You know, we did get the two goals, and they were two really good goals, but we had, you know, if you look at it as a percentage of all of our good chances that day, it's actually quite a low conversion rate overall. Obviously not as bad as Everton the other night, but yeah, we're just so brilliant going forward sometimes. And it is actually really good from Marco Silva, even after, you know, just a few days after the Tuesday's draw, that they were able to figure out Burnley quite so quickly as well, and just say, well, we'll just knock it over the top of them. Or even when, you know, Burnley were playing five at the back, basically, with Sander Berge literally just dropping into centre back a lot of the time. And we were still able to like play through their defence quite easily and create a lot of chances that way. And I think there's a lot of credit must go to Fulham as well in an attacking way. It's just so disappointing considering we're such in a commanding position that, you know, maybe it's just part of game management that we need to learn, maybe a bit more of experience. Maybe some of the substitutions didn't help. I think there's a lot of maybes. I don't think there's one particular thing that really sticks out for me that really made us actually poo on our own bed.
Well, we've had some real references so far in this podcast. It's taken about 7 minutes for us to be making defecating puns, which is not quite what I had in mind when the four of us got back together. Dom, it was, you know, as Ben said, the first 15 felt like two sides filling each other out. I thought Burnley probably had the better of it. But actually, you kind of look back at it and think, was that Fulham just getting to grips with the game and learning how they were going to try and punish this Burnley side? And then there's two very good goals. One, obviously, from a corner that João Palhinha heads in, and the other, a lovely finish from Rodrigo Muniz. And to be honest, my brother texted me at that exact moment, be like, relegate this spot immediately. They've just been dinked by Rodrigo Muniz. It's the end of days. You've got to go. But they were two well-worked goals. Obviously, set pieces have been a thing for Fulham, and we were frustrated in the midweek game against Everton because we had so many chances from set pieces and didn't take them. So to actually stick one in the back of the net was good vibes.
Yeah, and I feel like, I don't know if statistically if it's cred, but if it feels like last season we were very successful with set pieces. And I feel like this year it's been the complete opposite, where it's been attacking or defending. Our set piece players just felt totally different. And I don't know what that is, but it was good to see us take advantage of one of the corners, because we do get a high amount of corners the way we play, and we just don't seem to take advantage of them. But we did this time. Great ball in from Pereira, and then a great header from Joao Palhinha, sort of at the near post, past James Trafford. And then obviously that, once we got that goal, we were in control. Then you get Mooney's dinking it over Trafford to make it 2-0, and we thought, right, Fulham will go on and be in complete control now, and we should hopefully see out this game. That's what the sort of feeling was at half time. We're like, these lot of rubbish. There's a reason they're 19th in the table. And then so you go into half time feeling like that. Then at the start of the second half, we were a better team. We had chances. And I want to say there was another one from a set piece or a cross where James Trafford tipped it over the bar. So, and then to get onto the first goal, we can see it's just criminal to concede from as I was applauding our set piece play, to then concede our first goal from a Fulham corner.
Yeah,
and it was like, okay, we've given them a sort of goal back into the game, but you know, we should still have enough here. Like, we've been the better side. And then, yeah, capitulated for the second goal as well. So, yeah, it was quite a strange feeling, because it was more like everyone just confused how on earth we haven't won 3 or 4-0 and as opposed to drawing 2-2.
Yeah, I think that's it. It's one of those where, you know, you come out of it and you're thinking, how do we not win the game 5-0? It's not just how do we not win the game, it's how do we not take any of these chances? I suppose that the question becomes, Ben, you start talking about their first goal, and we start talking about Bernd Leno. It's been a bit of a wobbly month for Bernd Leno. We talked about the goal against Liverpool, which maybe is a little bit harsh in terms of the deflections it takes. But you look at the performance against Everton, where, especially from set pieces, Fulham looked incredibly dodgy at the back and that we could concede. And then whatever he's doing for this first goal, I don't think I'll ever know. Now, Tom made a good point before we came on air that we've just seen Alisson have an absolute stinker against Arsenal. So it's not been a great weekend for goalkeeping in the Premier League, full stop. There's been an absolute shed load of goals all over the place. I've seen some calls, and we had a few questions in this podcast from people saying, is it time to give Marek Rodak a chance? I feel like that's a little bit hasty. Bernd Leno, as Drew once said, has a lot of credit in this bank if we're talking about performances and what he's done in a Fulham shirt. But it would be disingenuous to say that that it has been a good month for Bernd.
Yeah, I think he's definitely been up and down against the high bar he set himself with his performances over the last 2 years. I think there's been so many times when he saved us, but his decision-making this weekend was inexplicable, to come for that cross knowing that he couldn't get to it, or seemingly pulled out halfway through. I just couldn't fathom what he was trying to do there. And when you're a team of our ilk, you need your core players really stepping up throughout every single game to maintain the status that you have in this league. And Leno is one that consistently steps up, but just didn't this weekend. And ideally, you're looking for him to pull himself back up again in the coming run of games. I think you're spot on. It's way too early to even consider Marek Rodak going back in goal. And to be honest with you, I think he'd probably be a little bit out of his depth anyway. I do like Marek, but I think Leno's just a step above. And there's a reason why we performed so well this year. And there's a reason why we've picked up so many points, and Bernd Leno is that guy. So hopefully he just picks it back up. But looking back to his Arsenal days, he is definitely capable of a few blunders and a couple of mental errors. I don't know if you remember a few of them, Jack, especially during the COVID season. He was incredibly patchy with his decision making. But I think there's so many positives to his game. I think his distribution is definitely one of them. It's the reason why we get out the block so quickly, is because he's able to use either foot to spur on those counterattacks. But yes, we'd prefer that he definitely brings it all back in. And I think it's also a factor that we need to bear in mind, is that we're now back to a different centre-half pairing here with Ream and Tosin. And I think they don't give the same security as Tosin and Bassey did. I think we're greatly missing Bassey. And I loved the chemistry that Tosin and Bassey had before AFCON started. And I do genuinely think that, as much as I love Tim, he's definitely lost a step this season, even more so than last. And that's not the first time that a team has actively came out and targeted his area of the pitch throughout the full 90.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Obviously, you know, Farrell, we talk about performers playing well and then suddenly having, you know, a moment where they capitulate. We saw the same for Kenny Tete for the second goal, someone who's usually incredibly reliable. I wonder if there's something in the idea that, you know, Bert Leno had basically nothing to do for the entire 90 minutes. Mm. The big opportunity that Burnley fashioned in the first half whistled wide. He basically didn't have a save to make. So the moment that he decides to make those issues or make that decision to come out and actually try and claim that ball and be nowhere near it is the first real action he has of the half. And I wonder if that's playing into it. Equally, we're talking about Kenny Tete, who's just come off the bench, maybe not as, you know, hot as perhaps he'd like to be. That's where it gets a little bit uncomfortable, I think.
Yeah, maybe a little bit of rustiness from Tete. I think Bert Leno, you're probably in the right ballpark in terms of, you know, he didn't really have a great deal to do and he's looking a bit rusty. But that's, you know, that's where top goalkeepers really earn their mustard, especially at the biggest teams where they, you know, actually rarely have to shine. But when they're called upon, they actually produce a moment of brilliance. Maybe Leno.
Yeah, Ben Leno had that opportunity and left. So, exactly. Actually, that's maybe what we're looking at here.
Yeah. But I think we're quite far away from Ben Leno being dropped right now in favor of Marek Rodak. I really like Marek Rodak. You know, he had a fantastic half a season when he first came in the championship. His level dropped a little bit back in the second time of the championship, but even so, and this is nothing against Marek Rodak, I just think that Leno's bottom ability is greater than Marek's top ability, if I'm honest. I think Leno gives us more than enough in shot-stopping ability, cross-claiming, calmness, distribution, pretty much in every area that I think he's better than Rodak. I think the Tete thing is more probably an indicative of how thin the squad is at the moment. The fact that we are sort of moving people around, that we have to sort of squeeze Tete on and move players around, put Pereira on the right wing. It's just indicative of where the squad is at the moment, that Marco Silva's trying to manage the squad and manage people's minutes enough. In any other sort of like time when everyone is fit at the moment, I don't think that Tete's even coming on. But that's no disrespect to Tete. You know, he's coming in cold when Burnley have got their tails up and they managed to exploit it. I do actually think it's quite a good ball, you know, inside him. It's just out of his reach. I just think it's a little bit of a misjudgment from Tete to try and go for it and ends up getting caught out.
Yeah, I can understand that. This is from Zimzam Stom, and I think it's probably worth bringing this kind of point up. He says, at what stage do we stop making excuses for Marco and our repeated late capitulations? That's not on recruitment or injuries. There's no reason why we shouldn't be able to see out 2-0 leads against championship level sides. It's not the first fluffed win this season. And whilst I think that maybe it's a little bit harsh to lay that at Marco Silva's door, I do think there is something to be potentially questioned a little bit about the mentality late on in games for this side right now. Now, yes, I think it would be also disingenuous to not talk about the fact that these players are knackered. And we'll come on to rotation and a couple of questions around the squad in the second part of this podcast. But the idea that we wouldn't be able to see out a win against opposition or let opposition back into a game who had absolutely no footholds to grab onto, I think is a relevant point.
Yeah, and I actually thought Silva's substitutions didn't really make sense yesterday, personally. I didn't really get them. Like, obviously, Broia coming on for Muniz, and I thought Broia didn't look fit, personally, when he came on. He didn't look like a match fit player to me. And then Kenny coming on for Bobby Reid and Tete coming on for Pereira. I didn't really get it from a personnel perspective and first of all, just a tactical perspective, especially the latter two with Kenny coming on and Tete coming on, especially Tete for Pereira. I just didn't think that made sense for the last sort of 5-10 minutes because that's always just going to invite the pressure. So I think there is something to be said about it. But obviously, Silva doesn't have credit in the bank, obviously. And then I think you know, our schedule with the players we've got available, you know, with no Obi and no Wilson, there isn't really any options we have. But I think there is something to be said that we do. It, which is weird because last season, especially once we went into the lead, you never really thought we were going to give it away. And so, yeah, I think there is something to be said about it, but I think a lot of it does sort of come into the players. But I do think when it comes to mentality of some of these players, I do think in some games it's definitely been off this season. I think in that first half against Liverpool in the second leg, what I said to people at half time was like, it didn't look like players are up for it. In certain times, it looks like Willian was the only player trying to do something in that game. But yeah, I think there is something to be said. But I think there is. I just think sometimes with the mentality of the players, it has been off this season.
I think the one substitution that probably did make sense was actually just bringing Tom Cairney on to sort of control the game a bit more. But he saw hardly any of the ball. Like, the amount of times there are opportunities to play to him.
We haven't seen him deep, right?
Yeah, yeah. But I think bringing on Cairney makes sense. I just don't think it made sense bringing him on for Bobby Reid.
Yeah, no, exactly. And, you know, he is brilliant, as we saw in large proportions of last year, how much he was great at coming on and being able to, you know, just slow the game down, bring us up the pitch, get us away from danger. And we saw none of that yesterday. Basically, it was quite frustrating, and it must have been frustrating for Tom, because there were opportunities to get him the ball and he just wasn't receiving it. I don't know what it was. A nervousness, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think that it was the right move to bring Tom Cairney on, but it felt like we needed a player deep. Now, you can argue that Harrison Reed and the energy that he brings defensively in that midfield was a move to try and see out the game. I will butt back a little bit in that I think that we spoke, Ben, about the fact that as soon as Pereira went out to the right-hand side, Burnley started to target that area. And so actually to bring on a second right-back to sit in front, Dom's right, and it invites pressure. But actually it did kind of feel like it maybe was a sensible move in that we'd seen that pressure start to build down that side. Can we close it off? Now, obviously it didn't work, but I do understand where he's coming from that. I don't understand not allowing Tom Cairney to try and slow the game down and control possession.
Yeah, I can understand that part. For sure. I also, like, I think when we need to think bigger picture about these substitutions, because I don't think that there was any intent for Fulham to go out and kill that game off with the substitutions they made in the second half. It was, okay, we've just let a goal in. We're going to try and batten down the hatches and see this game out. And it was very obvious the way the game was going and the momentum had shifted towards Burnley that we probably needed to try and gain more foothold in the game, which I can understand with trying to bring on Tom, but the game completely bypassed him. And actually, I think the presence of Reed was good. I think he broke up so many of their attacks. I think Paulinho yesterday had a little bit of an off game by his standards. And to be honest with you, I would never have stuck Andreas out on the right. It gave them the impetus and the momentum the moment that happened. I just think that, going back to the previous point of the conversation, Silva has a lot of credit in the bank in the same way that Leno does. But the credit for a manager runs out a lot quicker than it does for a goalkeeper.
Yeah, and I think absolutely. That
there's a lot of questionable decisions that have been made over the last few games in terms of tactical setup, in terms of substitutions, and in terms of moving from one game plan to another. And that's something that is trended the whole way throughout Silva's managerial career, is that he has one very set way of playing. He has a certain type of player that he uses, but once he gets figured out, it's very difficult for him to, like, you know, turn the tide or like right the wrongs. So I'd like to see him sort of use a different style of play or be a little bit more firm with substitutions. Just like circling back to the point I made originally is that, and again, going back to the previous segment, was that you should be able to go out and see off this game 3 or 4 nil. If you're up 2-0 at half time, you should not be losing a game if you've scored more than 2 goals, in my opinion. You should be out there trying to get a third early in the second half and really see out that game from there onwards, not sort of teeter around a 2-0 lead, trying as much as you can to like stem the tide. It shouldn't be like that. We're better than that. And like Silva has more managerial chops than just to try and sit on a 2-0 lead and make substitutions for the sake of making substitutions. I really couldn't understand what he was trying to do by shifting Andreas wide.
I also think though, like it shows, it just makes me think why we didn't try sign a wide player even on loan.
Yeah.
In the window, because there was no one to bring on. Like I think Broyer and Cairney were our only attacking minded players that are on the bench. Show, especially with the Wilson injury, I just don't think it made sense to only just about get a striker over the line, which
yeah.
Although we do, obviously we needed someone in that area. We're even lighter in the wide positions with Iwobi being at AFCON,
yeah.
With Wilson being out, with God knows how long Traore is going to be out for. Will he ever play?
He doesn't exist,
game for
man. He doesn't exist.
Yeah, like,
he's in the same place that Lionel Cole is.
Yeah, he's in the locker room at Bad Mosby. He's never letting out.
It, it just doesn't, I just don't, it shows that we, that was actually a position that we probably need to sign a player in. And because, you know, they're not being actually a wide option to bring on.
I was just going to say, the big overarching theme throughout the whole of the January transfer windows was that everyone was like right up against FFP. No one's got any money, et cetera, et cetera. Fulham are probably the only exception to that rule in that we might be up against FFP more than I understand it, but we definitely have money in the bank. Like we barely spent in the summer. And then we sold Mitrovic right at the end of the summer transfer window. And then again, like, we should have funds there to go out and do something effective in the market, even if it's just a couple of small moves.
Yeah, I mean, I would caveat this with one thing, that I think we probably are slightly tighter to the line than perhaps we expected. And obviously, you're probably looking at loans then. And I wonder if there is something in the idea that if we loaned a winger, right, someone who you feel is probably going to improve or at least, you know, keep the squad steady, it must be quite a hard sell to suggest to someone, you'd be like, oh, we want to, you know, loan a winger from you and, you know, they'll get game time. When they go, well, hang on, when Iwobi's back, when Wilson's back, because that injury doesn't look too bad, are they actually going to play? And I wonder if that factors into it, because actually we're just in a particularly tough moment. But I do agree. I said beforehand that, we, you know, having three strikers on the books at the start of the season felt nuts because we don't play with two strikers. And actually, any time we've tried to throw two strikers up top, it's not worked because that's not the way that Fulham are set up to play. So actually, if you want an overload of players who can play in one position, it's definitely not up front. It's definitely out wide. So, I mean, I agree with you, Dom. I think that was the position that I would have maybe looked at very, very heavily. But I think that if we'd signed a winger and not a striker, everyone might have gone absolutely ballistic. So it's a case of treading the line in that one. Dom, I suppose, you know, kind of final question on this, and we'll take a break and we'll answer some of the questions, some of which are related to Burnley, some are a bit more broad ranging. But where do you think it leaves us? Because that week against Everton at home and then Burnley away felt like the kind of week we really probably needed to get 4 points minimum from. Now, it's been an okay weekend from a Fulham perspective in terms of everybody else, because the teams around us and below us haven't really picked up any points. Brentford obviously yet to play, but they play City tomorrow night. You'd fancy the chances of them picking anything up are relatively slim. Not impossible, but relatively slim. You know, we saw Bournemouth drop points in the place above us. We saw Chelsea lose. That's the teams all the way down from, you know, halfway in the league. Palace lost, Forest drew, Luton drew, Everton drew, Burnley drew, Blades lost. So actually, we haven't lost any ground, but it felt like an opportunity missed nonetheless.
Yeah, I think it was important to get 4 or 6 points if we had any aspirations really of pushing for top 10. Because I think it would have been, if we're 4 points better off this week, we'd be 2 points off the top half instead of six. You know, we're only 1 point less off the top half of the bottom three. I'm not saying we're in a relegation battle. We're not, as far as I'm concerned. But I think us and Bournemouth are sort of just stuck in this sort of 12th, 13th position in the table where we're looking ahead up in the league to try and push for a top half finish, but it's probably too far off. And I don't think there's enough teams below us who could overtake us in regards for us to go down. But I think it is a concern that we've won one league game since the middle of December and we're now into February. Apart from Arsenal, we haven't won in the league since we beat the 2-5-0s against West Ham and Nottingham Forest. And the Arsenal game, and it's not like in these league games, actually, we've actually been playing well and not getting results. I don't think we've played well probably since that Arsenal game a month ago, like properly especially in the league. You can look at a couple performances as well, but yeah, it's a bit of a weird situation. I thought we had games where, you know, we're like, oh, these are games we should be getting points in and maybe help us push for a top 10. And we haven't seen that. And I think it is a combination of factors. One of them is to do with the amount of games we've had with the League Cup. But I think crashing out of both cups in the same week was obviously devastating in regard to sort of the rest of the season, because I think a lot of Fulham fans are probably thinking, can we just get the rest of the season out of the way now because there's not really too much to play for. But I think it just leaves us in this limbo with Bournemouth, essentially, where we're not going to push for top 10 and we're not really going to go down.
Personally, I just think that's a pretty good position. You know, at the end of the day, if we finish 12th or 13th come the end of the year, I think that's a good finish. You know, we're obviously a little bit spoiled with what happened last year.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's a bad
bad
finish, but I just think it makes the rest of the season really dull for us because there's not really anything on any of the rest of our games.
Yeah, I mean it doesn't work against that. May, right? There could be nothing till May. Go on, Ben, though. I think that's a fair point.
I kind of want to counter it because, like, 12th or 13th, yeah, I guess you can kind of see it as a good finish. We had our star player leave just before the season started. We haven't replaced him, etc. But last year gave us such a huge platform to go on and be someone that is probably bumping their head on Conference League or maybe Europa League if we really invested in the right way. We didn't. And now what are we going to be? Southampton for the next 5 years? Just treading water around 12th to 10th place every single year and then eventually just dropping out like we did in 14? Like, I don't know. I kind of feel like we gave ourselves such a huge platform and we didn't take it. And now we're just like, is this just us?
Yeah, I said there's no reason if we pushed on in the summer by spending money, we couldn't be where West Ham are right now.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying we'd be sixth, but it should have been a summer of, yes, we get, 15 for Mitrovic. I think we can talk about the transfer as much as we like and why he's gone there, but 50 mil for Mitrovic, I think at his age you take. I think we spent 20 we spent 20 and got 50 in. So we made we got £30 million there and we didn't spend it. I agree with Ben as well, but it's not a bad position to be in, being in 12th, but this really should have been a season where we built on last season instead of sort of regressing ever so slightly.
Yeah, I think we'll take good points. I think, I'd much rather us be in this position when we're spending sort of conservatively rather than absolutely break the bank and still end up in exactly the same position. But then again, this was supposed to be the year that we were going to kick on transfer-wise because we got all of those players off the books that we've had, like Anguissa and Seri. They're no longer factors in FFP and also Mitrovic as well. And considering there was an article in The Athletic about, the top revenue-making clubs in the world, and Fulham sit 26th in clubs. top revenue in the entire world, above big teams in France and Germany and whatnot. And yet we're still sort of like scrapping around and patting ourselves on the back for the fact that we won't spend £4 million on a loan signing and we get him for free and whatnot. It does feel a bit weird and in that regard. And yeah, I think there was opportunities out there to strengthen. I said last week to some friends, like, not a lot of people around us are strengthening, and I think we're actually a relatively good position squad-wise, but that was possibly before Wilson got injured, before Jimenez got injured. There was definite opportunities to strengthen, and for some reason, Fulham don't seem to want to take them. Everyone seems a bit nervous as well as Fulham.
Yeah, agreed. All right, we'll leave it there for part one. We'll be back after the break to answer all of your questions. Don't go anywhere.
This is an advertisement for BetterHelp, a portal for finding online therapy. How's your social battery right now? If you feel a bit drained or lacking enthusiasm to meet all the social commitments in your life, then that can be a totally normal thing, especially with things picking up as we head out of winter. I know that pretty frequently a weekend just doing a few chores and watching the football was about the limit of my energy resources. But therapy can be a place to help you gain the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your batteries. Contrary to popular belief, therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. The overall goal is to empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if therapy is something you've considered, then why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. They'll match you with a UK mental health professional with a wide variety of expertise. There's no referral needed, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, giving you complete control over the whole experience. Fulhamish listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fulhamish. That's betterhelp.com/fulhamish.
Welcome back to the Fulhamish podcast. Jack Collins here with Dom Betts, Ben Jarman and Farrell Monk. Just a word to say that this season Fulhamish is supported by NordVPN. So if you'd like to watch football games, TV shows which aren't available in your region, or you want to save some money by purchasing flights from different locations to go and see some football around Europe, personally, I use it to watch Belgian second division players that Fulham are linked with to make sure that we're actually signing anyone good. Although any signings will do at this point. A subscription to NordVPN is the price of a cup of coffee a month, and you can use one account on up to six devices. So grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/Fulhamish to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan and 4 additional months for free. Best of all, it's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/Fulhamish. Right, onwards and onto some questions. So we got one here from our very own AF, who says, "Seems clear to me that our injuries are being caused by burning out our squad. Too many minutes to try and cover for the lack of depth. Given this, can you think of a feasible, outside of loans, reason why youth is not being integrated more into the current setup?" And kind of to add to that, Mark Holliday said, "No disrespect to the current players, but Saturday highlighted the lack of depth in the squad, forcing Silva to play players who need a rest to keep up the intensity. I feel Silva has kept players who wanted to go but stayed for him, and I worry about summer exits." What do you think, Ben?
I think I'm a little bit further away from this than some of you guys are, simply because I don't get the coverage. But the way I see it is that a lot of the youth players that are on the cusp of making the squad are actually out on loan elsewhere. So there's quite a big gap in quality between what's remaining of the youth versus our actual first team squad. And then just the level that the Premier League is against those leagues like the reserve leagues and maybe the lower leagues that a lot of the youngsters play their trade in. So I always temper these questions with a little bit of a pinch of salt. And especially we always get them, you know, they always come in against a very strong trend. When Fulham are doing badly, people start asking questions about youngsters. And I think the key thing to remember is that the level of the Premier League is the best in the world, and everything else, there's a huge gap towards it. So I would really temper the expectations. But I mean, the way I see it is that all of our, you know, cream of the crop youth talent is elsewhere right now. So there is no one else to bring in. I don't know necessarily if you guys all agree with that sentiment, just because you're a little closer than I am.
Dom, it would probably go on to the point about intensity, but I do think Ben's right here. Do you remember when Stevie Humphreys was the answer to all of the problems at Fulham? And then, you know, we've seen where his career has gone since, and he's doing fine, but hardly setting things alight in League One. It's not, it's clear that that's wasn't
the answer.
He was
banging in goals in the Conference League for Hearts, mate.
Well, there you go. There's one level above us at the end of the day. But is there something here about the intensity? Because it does feel like injuries are starting to pile up. We saw Tosin looking like he was nursing a hamstring injury towards the end of the game. We don't know how serious that is yet, and we'll come on to a few questions about what that looks like. But it does kind of feel like, even though Fulham had three youngsters on the bench at the weekend in the Fougeroles, Sekularak and Josh King, at no point did I think that any of those players were going to come on.
Yeah, I think the closest you're going to have is the Fougeroles, but unless you get an injury at centre-half, you're not really going to bring a centre-back on, or unless you're, I guess, trying to protect a lead. But he did that by taking off Pereira and bringing on Kenny Tete. I think we've always really, really had an injury. Really had a problem when it comes to getting youth players into the side. Like, we've seen Ryan Sessegnon and Fabio Carvalho, I'd say, are the only ones I can really think of in recent years that we've had come into the first team, stay in the first team and make a difference. You know,
that was in the Championship, right?
Yeah. You know, Harvey Elliott, what did he make? 2 or 3 appearances? Then you had Dembele, who gave us sort of 18 months, you include when he sort of made his debut in the Premier League. Patrick Roberts was, well, if we played a system of wingers under Kit Simons, we might have played a bit more. But yeah, we do seem to have this thing where we have promising young players, but, you know, to be fair, how many of these a lot of promising young players we've had who aren't obviously the big names like your Dembele's, Harvey Elliott's kind of thing, who's gone on and done stuff, you know. As Jack mentioned, Humphreys, what he's played for, like Hearts, Wigan, teams in the either, so you're Scotland and in the lower half of the EFL. So I think, and you know, I think the main one who sticks out is obviously Jay Stansfield, but I think for his development, it is good for him to stay at Birmingham for the rest of the season. I think now Rooney's left St Andrews, it's a good thing for him. All the Blues fans I know think he's absolutely great and want to sign him on a permanent deal. I was like, well, unless you're going to spend sort of 25, 30 million pounds on him, you're not going to get him. And, you know, Birmingham, no owners, who knows? But yeah, I think people because the players are doing it for the under-21s or something. You know, we've seen Ollie O'Neill, who was a very promising young player, just go to Leyton Orient in the transfer window just been. So I think people sometimes do forget the gap between competing and doing well at under-21 level to actually making an impact on the first team. But I think I don't think it's an issue with youth, really. I think it's an issue with Tony Khan and Ali Mack or whoever's in charge of buying players in, thinking, oh, look, these are the players we've got and it looks good. But then as soon as you get two or three of them out, then the squad's very bare thin. I think there are sort of some areas where we have depth, and then there's some areas where once a couple of players go out injured, there's not really anyone else, I'm thinking, especially in the wide areas.
Yeah, I mean, Faz, anything to add on the kind of injuries? And is it just because we've had so many games across January and so many important games as well, where it felt like actual rotation wasn't really possible? You know, we're going into this week and it's the first time in what feels like forever that Fulham haven't had a midweek game. We're able to just take a little bit of a breather. It has really taken its toll on this squad. And look, you can question the hierarchy and the ownership and the recruitment strategy on not being able to foresee the fact that obviously 2-3 players are going off to AFCON and they're playing for nations who could well go far in the tournament. So you're kind of thinking, okay, we should probably have cover for that. But equally, it does feel like this spate of games with a stretch squad has made the problems even worse, has really exacerbated the fold.
Well, I would loathe to insult the hierarchy on anything at all whatsoever at the moment. I think that's just down to Marco Silva to manage, really. And I think that coming up, you know, he's had, you know, a great season in the Championship where the games come thick and fast all the time and no one game is less important than the next one. So he comes with, you know, the ability to manage not just the 11 on the pitch, but, you know, 20 or so players who want to play week in, week out. But, you know, the level required to play at the Championship and the level of resources that Fulham have available to pick up players in the Championship who do play at Championship level, you know, was pretty endless. But it might just show how difficult it is to pick up the level of quality that the Premier League require and the Fulham require to challenge in the Premier League, you know. Marco Silva's got a tough job on his hands, and it's not just him, it's loads of other players, loads of other managers at this level as well. I just think it shows how difficult a job it is. The only game recently that we were able to maybe manage some game time a bit more was that Newcastle game, the FA Cup game, and we played a sort of like one and a half, not a second string 11. But, you know, I think yesterday, if Fulham picked up 3 points, I don't think we'd be having this discussion, really. I think if we managed that game a bit better and got the 3 points, I just don't think we'd be having this discussion. We would probably look at how paper thin the squad is.
You'd be calling
is.
It a good week if we got the 3 points yesterday.
Yeah,
like four points 100%. From these two games.
But is that the point, right? That, you know, we actually got very tired.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe it is indicative. Maybe. Maybe it would just paper over the cracks a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. It comes on to this next point, which is now if Tosin is injured. Now, again, we don't know exactly what the details on that one are. Jordan says, should we give the Fougeroles a shot if Tosin isn't 100%? And Fulham Fan News said, who's partnering Ream against Bournemouth? Ben, it's a funny one because obviously Diop's injured. Bassi remains at AFCON for the time being. And even if he was to be knocked out in the semi-finals with Nigeria, you'd assume that he doesn't come straight back in and get into the team immediately. It's, you know, the way that these games fall. So if Tosin is out injured, is it wiser to give someone like Luke de Fougeroles a shot? Or is this a moment where João Palhinha drops into the back line and just to kind of paper the cracks until Bassi does return?
I mean, I think I probably lean towards the second half of that, in that you put someone that's a bit more experienced into the back line and we go from there. I mean, we've got a pretty tough run of fixtures coming up over the next couple of weeks. Like Bournemouth, I think, is probably doable with someone like Fougeroles in the back line. But the game subsequently after that is going to be a bit of a baptism of fire for someone that young. I mean, we got quite lucky in that this week, Bournemouth picked up a couple of injuries and had a red card to Philip Billing. So we might not get the full outfit there. And, you know, the game might be closer than the return fixture. But I'd be more tempted to play someone else at centre-half than De Fougerolle, despite the fact he is a good Canadian boy.
Tom?
It's Bournemouth, so we're not going to get anything from Gale.
This is the type of just analysis play, I'm
play
here
the B
for.
Team. Yeah, just play the B team. Play the B team. It doesn't matter.
It's Fulham Bournemouth. We never get a result against them. I think that 1-0 in the season we went down is generally the only time I remember us beating them since we sort of started playing them in around 2014-15.
You can yeah, if we I do mean, get a result, a how many three-word reviews are we gonna get of popped our cherry?
Quite a lot, you'd imagine. Quite a lot.
None of them are gonna suppress claret and poo though.
That's where we've got to. That's exactly the level of this podcast at this point. So fair enough. All right, we'll move on from that topic and from the continued defecation references. And I'm going to go to Chris Chedazinho, who says, will Iwobi and Bassey winning AFCON benefit us more in the long run? They'd come back in great spirits and winning can hopefully be contagious. I will kind of caveat this with the fact that even if Nigeria were to get knocked out in midweek in the semi-final, again, they probably won't be back for the weekend and the final's at the weekend. So the chances are that whether they win, lose or draw from here on, we're probably going to have Bassey and Iwobi back for exactly the same point anyway.
Yeah, and I think if we're playing one of our players going away to an international tournament, I'm not one of these people who want them to lose and get back as soon as possible. Like, if there are players who want them to go away and win the tournament.
Yeah, I'm with you. We are potentially the only people in the world who like international football, Dom. So.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I'm just waiting for the Euros now. That's generally the only thing that's getting me through.
I like international football. I'm just going to put that out there.
All right, fair enough. Yeah, so do I. This is the only podcast in the world where we four members like international football.
I'm going to the Euros in June.
South Africa.
Yeah, they do.
Nigeria has South Africa, whose goalkeepers just save four penalties in the penalty shootout. There's no way they're getting past him. Guy's like God in between the sticks.
Shades of Fulham legend Andre Arkansas.
Oh, wow. Wow, that's really quite a reference. Chris, to answer the question, I think we should be supporting them to win this tournament at this point. If they'd gone out in the group stages, then maybe you could make an argument that Fulham could have had them back when they needed them. But at this point, I don't think it makes any difference at which point they come back. So we should want them to win it.
This is really going off the rails, but I really did enjoy it when Fulham used to be Super Eagle FC back in 2019-20, yeah, when we had Lookman, Tosin and all the Nigerian guys.
Josh Madger.
Yeah, and then there was that random... Yeah, the picture of Scott Parker dressed up in traditional Nigerian clothing was one of my favourite ever images of that season.
Photoshopped, we should add. Yes. But it was very, very enjoyable. All right, yeah. Chris and Barney say, who's your preferred starting right back? Faz?
Oh, that's a tough one. That's a really tough one. I love Kenny Tete. And I think I've been really impressed with Timothy Castagne. I think it's too close to call for me. I think that what Kenny Tete can bring to our forward line is it's incredible from a right back position. But that's, you know, I think that his ceiling of attacking is probably better than Castagne's. However, I think Castagne has showed like how consistently good he can be backwards and forwards for us. So I think Tete's, you know, just thinking about it out loud, I think Tete is probably better at both attacking and defending. But I think Castagne this season has been more consistent.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair enough. Ben, I would add this to that question. We now have a striker who likes to get his noggin on the ball again. And we saw that Tete Dimitrovic link up work on numerous occasions last year. Does that factor into this discussion? Because there was a point where Fulham stopped playing like they did last season because Mitrovic wasn't there. We now have a player in Armando Broja, hopefully, who comes here and starts to rebuild a little bit of that aerial presence that's in the middle that maybe we've lacked a tad of with Muniz and Raul up there. Does that change the need a little bit of right back?
Yeah, I think it does actually, because when you asked me between the differences, between Kenny Tete and Castagne, the main difference is the quality of delivery, I think. Other than that, I think they're fairly similar in their attacking and defensive output. I think both are very, very good at having a good level to their game in terms of being able to defend appropriately and get forward when really needed. But the defining factor between both of them is that Kenny is so good at whipping in those crosses. And now we have a defined presence in the box, I think that we will see him utilised a little bit more. I think Castagne, for me, I don't know. He just comes across as a rock steady player. Like, very dependable on both sides. If you're looking for a little bit of balance, he's the guy you're looking for. Kenny, on the other hand, is that guy that you're looking for a little bit more attacking impetus from. And now we have an established player once Breuer gets match fit. I do think we'll start to see the inclusion of Tete out there a little bit more. I think Castagna is just, on the whole, a little bit more intelligent with his passing inside his build-up play, whereas Kenny is a lot more prone, for want of a better phrase, to lumping it into the box, albeit the delivery is good.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. All right, Dom, one for you from Eddie O, who I really enjoy his at, which is at Cottagerish Ed, which is a sort of play on all of these things, which is great. He says, are we potentially looking at a massive summer rebuild? And I think whilst we probably don't need to go into all of the depth of it, it's probably worth considering at this point.
Yeah, I think I'm not necessarily saying a rebuild, but I don't think that's quite what I'd word it as. I don't think it's like we've got a massively aging squad that needs totally redeveloping. But there are some key areas where I think we need to invest in, you know, not necessarily young players, but, you know, players who are like 23, 24, who will come to the team, got a point to prove. I'm not saying that we're going to have loads of players coming and using it as a stepping stone for a move to a top four team, but there is sort of positions where it is not necessarily getting stale as such. I'm not saying Tim Ream and Bobby Reid and Kearney and stuff are making it stale, but we just some fresh impetus in the team, really, because it's compared to last season, what's really different apart from not having Mitrovic up front and then whoever we have up front. So I think it's more just maybe the rebuild is as such is rebuilding the system that we're using to adapt something else Silva wants to do to get new players in. But we definitely need some fresh investment in the summer, which hopefully this January and this season was just to get around PSR. And then hopefully from next season, we can start investing the money, because it's not like we've got one of the richest owners in the league yet. We've hardly spent any money. You know, we spent loads of money obviously when he first came on, but as one knows, spent 100 million and went down. But to be honest, yeah, I think we need to completely sort of revamp the squad in regard to getting players who are younger, because we have got quite an old team, if we're being quite honest.
Yeah, very old. Very, very old. All right, we're going to finish this with one more question. It's from Weekly Geekly. I like this. He said, it can often feel like it's doom and gloom supporting Fulham, but what are your three positives from the season so far? I'm going to ask you each to pull out a positive. Dom, I'll give you the longest to think about it because you're the most naturally negative of the four of us. As fast as you can start.
Bloody hell. Why did you have to ask us after capitulating a 2-goal lead away at Burnley? Can you have done this post-Arsenal?
Well, I think that's the exact point, right?
Yeah. I think given everything that's gone on recently with the results, I think the biggest positive in this is just Marco Silva. I think he's really, I think he generated a lot of credit from last season. And if anything, given the struggles off the pitch, you know, with transfers and the fan unrest and all this, I think he's really still come into his own, and he's still managed to get the best out of this Fulham squad.
Okay. All right, Joms.
My personal highlight of this season has been Alex Iwobi. I've loved Iwobi ever since he broke through on the scene at Arsenal. And I was actually really pleased when we signed him. I know that probably in the years in between, I've probably had a couple of comments about the way he plays at times, but I really think that he's been a breath of fresh air since he joined Fulham. He's given us some great impetus. It's nice to see a younger player being bought by Fulham that's just entering into the prime of their career. And I think that Iwobi has showed some brilliant maturity across a number of the games. More importantly, some versatility, which I think has brought into his game recently, especially through the middle of the pitch. And I think since he's gone to AFCON, to be quite honest with you, he's been such a huge miss for us going forward. And our attacking output has really suffered. So Iwobi is my positive. And I think a very close second would be Calvin Bassey, to be honest.
You might not remember this, Jans, but I do remember vividly having a long conversation with you at Alex Iwobi in a bar somewhere about 5 or 6 years ago, probably completely pissed, being like, hopefully we'll sign him one day.
I do remember that, actually, yeah. And I think I've spoken about this every time I've been on the pod recently, is that I went to watch Fulham versus Arsenal at the Emirates, and Iwobi was there, and he was so good. And I've always hoped we'd sign him ever since. And now, obviously, it's one of those that's actually come to fruition and it's been really good for the club. So that's great. There's been a couple that I've always wished we'd had signed and then they've turned out to be absolute rubbish. One of which being Fernando Amorebieta. And I was also buzzing when we signed Erby Emanuelsson. He was also crap. So I wouldn't take any of my advice on transfers going forward.
Well, these two pulled off. These two pulled off. Tom, yeah. Over to you.
We don't have to go Merseyside for the rest of the season now. After, what is it, like 5 or 6 times in the last 10 months or whatever it is. But positivity-wise, obviously the League Cup run, some great stopping and winning a trophy and Tottenham winning a trophy for another season. Great penalty shootout win away at Everton was fantastic. Continuing our good run at Goodison Park. It seems like since COVID, it's completely switched our luck there. So the League Cup run in general, because I don't remember the last we had any good results really in the League Cup. Another positive of the season is that we've just become a stable mid-table Premier League team again. Like last season wasn't just a one-off, and then we'd be back in a relegation battle this season, as we've seen with some teams who come up. I'm thinking of Sheffield United under Chris Wilder when they first came up. Who was sort of pushing, had that sort of small push for Europe and then obviously fell off and then had an awful season the next season. So I think that is something to take as a positive. It's just when you kind of build on that, as we mentioned earlier on in the podcast. Any other positives? It'd be great if Arsenal lose the league by 4 points. Because then we can just say we stopped them winning the league, which would be absolutely great.
You would enjoy that more than anyone, I think, which is enjoyable. Excellent. Fantastic. Some good positivity there, boys, to end this episode. And it means there's only a couple of things left to do, one of which is naming the podcast. So, Mr. Monk, what are you going for?
I was going to ask the panel, should we go for Claret and Blue or Claret and Poo?
Claret and Poo, 100%. It's got Claret and Poo.
Considering yeah. It's been mentioned about 200 times on the podcast, I think it's probably worth having. So we'll leave that
childless.
There. Fantastic. Yeah, we'll go with, we'll lean into the childishness.
There's no need for us to say feces.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. This is why it's been 7 years since the four of us were on a podcast.
It'll be another seven.
Sammy's going to be listening to this, being like, why have I let these idiots on again? So with that, I think all that's left for me to do is say thank you very much to Mr. Farrell Monk.
Thank you very much, Jack. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you very much to Mr. Ben Jarman, live from Canada.
Thank you very much, Jack, and great to be back on with all of you.
And thank you very much to Mr. Don Betts.
No worries, mate.
I've been Jack Collins. This has been the Fulhamish podcast. Thank you so much for listening as ever. And we'll see you later in the week when we're back with the Thursday Club, looking forward to Bournemouth. But for now, take it easy. You whites.
Toodles.